Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 8th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Mr. Tony Katan.
Tony Katan.
Tony Katan, shut up.
Oh, you know, man. I don't even know. I don't even know if you should really go there. It's not even poker related.
I think we have so many listeners that are so devoted to the show and invest their time and sweat and blood into listening to us every week. And I think it's important to them that they know that one of their co-hosts does not find Tony Katan hot and is not just oozing with envy when the other co-host, the more affable, funny, have a beer one, has a selfie with it and sends it to him.
And now I am seeing a therapist because the photo you sent me was giving me nightmares. And to this day, it's still haunting me.
Sorry. She still looks good at 56. I mean, I don't know how much of her is left. I think most of it's new.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot to her.
She picked the best parts off of the shelf when she went to the doctor. So.
Oh, man. I don't know. I guess if you think they're interested in hearing you seeing this woman, I see...
This woman?
In our line of work, I've run into celebrities dozens of times, and I don't ever bring it up on the show, but for some reason...
It's because you just weren't impressed. I'm shocked. I mean, that woman did more for the sale of white Jaguars in this country than anyone in history. And you're not impressed. You're not impressed.
So. What I was impressed about was for at least a decade, they let her nipple be on TV and no one knew it. There was a nipple slip in the actual car when she's hugging them and stuff and no one noticed it for years.
I knew I'd find some way for you to appreciate this.
Yeah, I mean, that, you can't not appreciate that, but I'm just saying... to run into her now when she's almost 60 and it looks like
56 or something.
Plastic doll.
It's like saying I'm almost 50.
Her face was so pulled far back, I thought I saw her pinky toe on her cheek.
That's fine. I know you're envious. You just don't admit it. You just, you know, this is the way you act.
It's true.
You're like, oh my God, that's awesome, man. You're like, no, it sucks. And then you're probably telling your wife, oh my God, and tears crying. Why can't my life be like Scott's?
So, like, did you pay extra to see her, or was it like a booth or something?
She was part of the whole big festival this weekend. So.
Wow.
Her and Bobby Brown from, and not that Bobby Brown, but the Bobby Brown from Cherry Pie.
Yes, I remember that Bobby Brown.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
She's your Cherry Pie.
Yeah, I didn't really like the Cherry Pie, but. But anyhow, so let's talk poker, right?
Yeah, let's try.
Ridiculous, you took us down this rabbit hole. All right, so you know, last week I was out at Petaluma for our Ante-Up Poker Tour series at the 101 Casino. I had to leave early so I could meet Tony Katan, of course. But it's always an interesting finish out there, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, last year we had the three guys that did the chop, and then they had to, like, you know, sort out the swag.
The swag, exactly.
Right? You know, one of them took the cover, one of them took the world championship. Shit.
Careful there. I don't want to have to hit the beep button.
It's the Botox I got today. Tanya insisted on it if I was going to see her again. World championship seat. And there again, I took the bracelet. So this year, and I really wish I was there, I mean, for lots of reasons, obviously, but this was interesting. The main event came down to a heads-up battle between two brothers, and I know I'm going to brutalize their name here, but Tona Kakwa and Tony Kakwa.
Kwa?
Kwa? How do you say it? Koi?
There's a Y at the end.
Kwa. I should move the Y in.
I'd say Katkui.
Katkui? All right. Tona Katkui and Tony E. Tona Katkui and Tony Katkui. Whew. Yeah.
That's not that much of a difference in those first names.
No, it's not really.
Yeah. I wonder if they have a lot of siblings and like it's T-O-N-E, T-O-N-I, kind of like the Foremans, George, Georgette and all that.
So there's probably a Tone Loc Cat Cooey.
Tone Loc Cat Cooey.
But anyhow, Tona is the one that came out on top and wins appearing on the June cover of Annie Up Magazine and a seat in the Annie Up World Championship main event. And his personalized champion's jacket. And then, of course, the good folks at 101 also threw in a bracelet as well, too.
Nice. So, and cash, too. Lots of cash.
Oh, yeah. Lots of cash. Yep. Yep. So it was a great great series. Every event smashed a guarantee. And we're definitely looking forward to being invited back next year. Maybe even this year. We'll see. But always fun out there. And, you know, the players are always so nice out there. I think I talked about this last year when I was out there. I mean, it's odd that you have to bring that up. Because you know, wouldn't you just like want to go in every poker room and everybody's just a good guy, good girl,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But we know it's not that. You know, some places you go, people are just jerks, and certainly there are jerks there as well too. But generally speaking, everybody's just nice in there and having a fun playing poker, and that's really refreshing. And again, it's sad that I had to bring that up, but
it's California, man. It's a relaxed. It's California, relaxed atmosphere.
I tell you that Northern California, I mean, every time I go out there, I just fall in love with it all over again. I mean, there's just so much cool stuff out there. You got the Pacific Ocean, you got wine country, you got, I went all the way up into the Redwoods this time, like, and wow, just a great place to visit, to be, and a tremendous place to play poker. And of course, you know, we're going to be back out in Sacramento in August as well, too.
Right.
So lots of time for people to come out there, and then obviously again in November at Thunder Valley. So two more opportunities to join us right now in Northern California. So hope folks come out there. But before that, next up for the Annie Up Poker Tour is the Grand Poker Series at the Golden Nugget of Las Vegas. That's going to kick off May 27th and run all the way to July 3rd. So if any of you are going out to Vegas this year for any reason, and maybe even for that smaller little tiny tournament down at the Rio called the World Series, come down and see me at the Golden Nugget, play some of these great events. And I know these events are great for the Annie Up Nation because a lot of mixed game events are on the schedule, so a way to get your fix on Stud in Omaha and things like that.
Right.
And so you can get all the details at antiupmagazine.com/Golden Nugget. The highlights include 1,100K guarantee events, 500K guarantee main event, and 16 non-hold'em events, as I mentioned. So a little something for everyone, and it's a great venue in downtown Vegas. If you guys haven't been down to downtown Vegas, you got to go down there. It's my favorite part. It's full fun down there. And they have a great room for it there, and we're really looking forward to this event.
Yeah, just don't go down there with Scott, because if he's driving, he drives down the wrong way. over like railroad tracks and stuff. It was not fun. So if you're going to go there, go in your own car. Hey, a couple of stories that we hinted at a couple of weeks ago. We had so much going on, or last week. But remember the Brian Mikan?
Yep.
The founder of the now-closed Bitcoin online site Sealed with Clubs. He's been charged in Nevada with running an unlicensed gambling system. Mikan is not in custody and is believed to still be on the island nation of Antigua. If he returns to face charges and is convicted, the charge carries a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. Didn't think it was going to be this serious. I didn't. Especially with the way it was kind of phrased when we were talking about it before.
Yeah, I think when we brought him on the show last time, it seemed odd that there was like a raid at his house, right? And folks will remember that, a month or two ago, agents raided his house when he was there and didn't charge him, didn't put him in custody or anything like that. Just, I guess executed a warrant, right?
Yeah.
And then left, and then he's like, boom, I'm out of here.
Yep. Yeah.
Put the family on a plane and went to Antigua. And it seemed odd. It didn't actually seem like a warrant. It did sound like, in his words, a raid. I'm sure that's probably not the word the agency used. But obviously it sounded like something was going on there, and it just seemed odd that nothing happened. And it's because it probably just took him time to figure out what happened. And that's what's going on now. But it's interesting that the discussion there, that this is, really a charge. This unlicensed gambling system is really kind of like an old school mob kind of charge kind of thing. So it's a little interesting. And then certainly, I think one of the first times, if not the first time, that an online site has been charged with it there too. So it's definitely an interesting situation. And I don't know what the extradition from Antigua is. I guess it's probably not easy.
Right.
So I'm going to guess that we don't see him again other than on videos. So it's probably not going to end up in anything. I know his right after this broke, his lawyer said no comment. I haven't seen whether they had a comment since then. But We'll keep on top of it, see what happens. Okay. But, interesting.
Yeah. Also, a federal judge has ruled that FBI agents crossed a line by shutting off internet service to a Las Vegas hotel room and then posing as repairmen to gain access to the room rented by poker pro Paul Fua, who was charged...
Oh, I said Fua.
Fua, I don't know. You know, these names, I tell you. Let's just say by some poker pro. Paul Fua, who was charged with taking illegal sports bets from the room. Several associates of Fua have pled guilty... Or pleaded guilty, whatever. I always say pleaded.
Yeah, support is pleaded, not pleaded.
I know.
I don't know why. But
I know. I don't care. But he continues to fight the charges. Now, this apparently is not television, because this is what they do all the time on TV.
Yes, of course. Yes. It sounds like these FBI agents actually just finished watching, like, CSI Vegas.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, dude, let's just do that today. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Let's just do it.
This is pretty crazy, right? So, I mean, apparently he was running, what they allege, he was allegedly running a World Cup betting ring from the hotel room, which I find massively interesting, right?
Yeah.
Because you're in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Where sports betting is legal, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously he's profiting from it because he's the actual bookmaker, you know, if he actually did it, he was guilty, but, so there is something to that, but... Really, I mean, it sounds like this is something you would happen like Omaha, Nebraska, right? You don't have any other place to bet on something, so this guy's going to take bets, and then, you know, word gets out, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got federal agents playing TV stars, you know, showing up and shutting off your internet. Well, but not in Vegas.
One of the questions I have, Scott, is, because I didn't read this as carefully as you, but the judge says that they crossed the line. But now he still has charges. How can he be charged if what they did was illegal, like an illegal search or whatever?
I think that's probably part of this going to come up in the trial, and I'm sure his lawyers are going to try to get the charges thrown out, because but I don't think the judge can do that, I don't think. But I'm not a legal expert. I'm sure one of our fans is and can explain it better. But what the judge was saying was, you know, hey, this really, by the shenanigans that they did to do this, really gives them... the ability just to go and search any room ever for any
reason.
They have a warrant there, so they'll, you know, let's just shut off the internet. The guy's going to complain, and then we can show up with, you know, Joe's internet service, knock on the door and come in and snoop around for anyone, right?
Yeah.
And the judge was like, that's not cool. And I gotta say, I agree.
Yeah, I'm sure the ACLU is going to be involved.
And I'll tell you, the other thing, too, is if the hotel ever shuts off my internet, not calling it in.
Not calling it. Well, so what are you saying? You're doing stuff because, hey, you're my business partner. I want to hear about what you're doing.
No, I'm not doing anything, but I don't want to wake up in the middle of the night and find a federal agent with his hands between my pillows, you know?
Is this
like a plane? I got a chance now.
This planes, trains, and automobiles, by the way.
Exactly, right. It's not a pillow. I just need the internet off my phone, man.
See,
I
understand your wacky stuff sometimes. I get it. I know you're subtle, but I have to pick up on it sometimes.
Oh, but no, it's just, it's wrong. I mean, it's kind of cool when you know, we go back to TV, right? And it's fun on TV, depending on the show you're watching, right? Because some shows, they make you like the criminals and hate the cops, right?
Right.
And the other ones, you love the cops, but hate the criminals. But you always want the, like, the one-upping. So I give them credit for the one-up of the figuring out a creative way to get in, but, you know, somebody that... kind of like, you know, tours the country looking at museums and studying this little tiny thing scratching the napkin called the Constitution. This is just not cool, dudes. Not cool.
Not cool, dudes. All right, any updates? On June 15th, we'll celebrate our 10th anniversary of the very first Annie Up Poker Cast. So how should we mark the milestone? Send us your thoughts at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, or you can post them on our Facebook/Twitter pages. Or in the Annie Up group discussions on PokerRadius.com. Also, it's time for us to build up our bench of possible Annie Up ambassadors. We have an immediate opening in the St. Louis area. And if you'd like to be one of our monthly magazine contributors and represent Annie Up in your home area, apply at AnnieUpMagazine.com/ambassadors.
I wonder how many other people are going to suggest that we get plastic surgery.
That's a good idea. And I'll have my face look like yours, and you have your face look like mine. And no one will ever know. You know, face off, like
Travolta in the cage.
Yeah, there you go. No one would ever know.
I'm working on my Nick Cage. Everybody has to have a Nick Cage impression.
Yeah.
For me. Sorry.
Yeah, you know who's really good at that is what's his name from Big Bang? Howard, the guy who plays Howard.
Yes. I watched that on the plane the other day when he did all the impressions while they're playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
That was awesome.
He's unbelievable. He's got a lot of talent there, that guy. But he's incredible at Nick Cage because he even kind of looks like Nick Cage. So he does them awesome. He did them on Conan once one night. Had me rolling.
And I hate to say this because I hate this guy otherwise, but Andy Samberg does a good Nicholas Cage.
Yeah, he does. I saw him on Saturday Night Live. He does him
with Nick Cage.
With Nick Cage. That was awesome. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us a podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Foreign Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. It's our buddy O'Malley writing in.
O'Malley!
He says, one of my local poker rooms takes a rake of 10% up to $5 per pot and a Bad Beat jackpot rake of $1 per pot, which is pretty standard. Bad Beat was hit at one of my tables, but the room caps the Bad Beat jackpot at $5,000. So the table share was a mere $250 apiece after the loser and winner of the hand were paid. Who is pocketing the rest of that money? Shouldn't it be going to the players? Are we getting screwed here, or is this pretty standard? I just feel like since they're taking the money from the players, it should all go back into the poker community once it's hit.
I think we should have those federal agents from Las Vegas.
Turn off the internet!
And we'll get to the bottom of this, O'Malley. I'm glad he wrote this in because I get this question often when I'm traveling around to folks. In fact, I've actually had somebody go to the length of like spending an entire week in the room and counting tables and figuring out how much jackpot rate is taken.
Jeez.
And then looking at the Bad Beat jackpot and going, where is it going? So here's the answer. I can't say for certain that the money's not all going back to the players. You know, I don't run a casino. I don't run every casino, right?
Right.
So it's possible that the shenanigans going on, but I've never seen any proof of that. So I refuse to believe it until I see it. But the bigger issue is that, as I told O'Malley, I'm like, you know, is this room doing other promotions? Are they doing like Aces Cracked? Are they doing, you know, giving away an Annie of Poker Cruise? Or something like that. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, that's where that money's going.
Right. Free roll.
So, I mean, you get fixated on the big thing, the Bad Beat jackpot or something like that, but that it's not a Bad Beat dollar they're taking. It's a player promotional fund dollar.
Right.
And so that goes in to fund all those player promotions. And yes, it is expected that all that money goes back to the players in some form or fashion. And I believe almost all rooms actually do that.
Right. There are regulations, man.
People
don't even understand what goes on behind the scenes. I remember once being, and it might have been One-Eyed Jack's, when they have a money counting room.
Oh, yeah.
And these boxes are all, you can't get into these boxes. And it's not like they're, you know what I mean? These boxes, there's cameras everywhere. There's a gaming commission. They have to wear all white, put white gloves. I mean, it's unbelievable boxes, when they count the money and stuff. Believe me, you would have heard about these rooms. Somebody would have stung them by now. You know what I mean? I mean, if it's labeled a Bad Beat jackpot rake, then there's a problem, though. If that's what it says, if it says, like, right on a jackpot rake, or that's their saying, that's exactly what it is. If it says Bad Beat. If it just says jackpot rake, then that money is just a player fund, and they can do whatever they want with it as long as they give it back to the players. But if it specifically says this is a Bad Beat fund right here, and they're not giving you the Bad Beat fund, they're spending it on other things, even then, I'm not sure. As long as it's still going back to the players, it's probably still like a fine line between there being a problem. It's if they're keeping it or using it for their own benefit somehow. That's when you're getting screwed,
right.
Which is not happening, I don't think.
So I think the kind of takeout is when you go to a room is, you know, and you see them taking $1, and actually a lot of rooms are taking $2
now.
You know, if you're concerned about where that dollar's going, ask them, hey, what are all the promotions? And, you know, they usually have that. You know, if it's a good room, they have it already printed out for you so they can give it to you.
Right.
Because they want you to come in. That's the reason they do the promotions. And you'll see that they do a whole lot more than what you think. Now, you might not be there during the times of day they do it and stuff like that. But, you know, that's the way it works. But it's almost always more than just a Bad Beat jackpot.
Or you can just pick up a copy of Antiup Magazine and go to the back of the magazine, look at the poker room there, and you'll see the promotions they're doing. You know, and basically we pride ourselves on getting those up to date every month. You know, we ask them for what they're going to run that month, and we put it in there. So it's in there for a reason. So, all right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Antiup Poker Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's newest social networking site and home to the Annie Up group discussions. I feel like we're giving out our address a lot today. Do you?
That's fine.
Yeah, okay.
Because we won feedback.
Got to drill it into him, you know.
I've been on 10 years now here.
Yeah, that's right. This comes from Don Blowers. He says, I was playing in a free game at a local watering hole.
After I love the fact they use watering hole.
Watering hole, yes. After the flop, the three players in the hand, the action went check, check, bet. And before the other two players had a chance to act, the dealer burned and showed the turn card. He then realized that a bet had been made, and I couldn't believe what happened next. He took the exposed turn card, placed it back on top of the deck, and proceeded to shuffle the deck. I knew immediately that it was the wrong way to resolve the issue, but didn't say anything because I didn't know what the correct resolution was. Since this was my first time playing in this game, I just kept my mouth shut. How should the situation have been handled?
Yeah, and I'll let Don know this, so I'm not trying to embarrass him by having him on the show, but I think other people probably are confused by this, too. This actually was the right way to handle it.
Yeah, it's exactly what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, and the reason is that, he kind of skipped a step there, but I'm sure it happened, is you let the action continue now,
right?
And then you put the card back in the deck and shuffle it. And the reason you do that is it's the only possible way that that card can come back out.
Right.
So in a grand scheme of things, the most awesome thing that could happen is if it's four spades and they shuffle, they put the four spades back out, so it's the right destined card comes back out. Most often than not, it doesn't, obviously.
Right.
But that's the only fair way to do it. That way, I mean, because you can't get rid of that card, because now that card is out of the deck for no reason.
Yep.
And so that's just the proper way of doing it. So, I mean, it's unfortunate what happens. It always is, like, well, almost all the stuff would come to the floor, but... that's the way it's done.
Yep, that is the correct way. Glad he kept his mouth shut, though. That way he didn't embarrass himself or have somebody yell at him or whatever. So that was
Yeah, there's always a good way of bringing it up, but and maybe they had a discussion. But it is also, you know, you're at a free game in a local watering hole, right?
Yeah.
So our experience with the letters we've gotten over the years from over 10 years from our listeners is that there's not a lot of poker TDA regulations being enforced
that's
at
right.
Free games at local watering holes. So often I think it's probably counterproductive to even bring up rules or issues at that point.
Hey, y'all, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. We're going to refresh our memories here with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're in that same 2-5 No Limit Hold'em home game. We've been playing for about an hour since our last hand and currently sit with around 1,100. The table hasn't changed much since then. We haven't gotten any new players, and the mood has remained the same, although a few players have had to rebuy. We are the second largest stack at the table. The blinds post, and we look down, once again, at the King of Hearts, Queen of Hearts in the MP. Again, we make our standard raise to $25. The hijack, button, and big blind all call, and we're going to a flop with about $100 in the pot. It comes down the queen of spades, queen of diamonds, ten of hearts. This is a very good hand, unless we're up against ace-queen or pocket tens. However, I'm not going to be afraid of any monsters under the bed. The big blind checks, and we make it $60 to go. It's folded back around to the big blind, who makes the call. This is not the same villain as last week. This villain is a maniac, but he does have method to his madness. He'll play any two cards, and he can play them very well. He mixes his game up beautifully, trapping sometimes and walking the dog others. With about 220 in the pot, the turn is a blank, the four of diamonds. I'm still confident we've got the best hand and gain even more confidence once the big blind checks again. We decide to lead out for 125, a little more than half the pot. Our opponent thinks for a short while before making the call. He is starting to confuse me. Maybe that's what he wants. With about 465 in the pot, the river is yet another blank, the three of spades. After a short amount of time, our opponent shoves for his remaining 300. What's he doing? If we call and lose, we'll have about 600 left. Still up a Benjamin for the night. Are we calling?
All right, so if we don't think anything has changed since the flop, right?
Right.
And it doesn't sound like we do, then I think we have to make the call here. Now, last week I put, like, only two hands beat us, and you corrected me because there were,
yeah,
like, five or so, right?
Right.
So, but anyhow, not many hands beat us, and specifically hands that I think that would take this line, right? So, you know, if we're wrong, we're still up for the night. And this is why we accumulate chips, so decisions like this aren't as hard as they seem. You know, we got the chips to make the weaker calls, the borderline calls, not the weak calls, the borderline calls, and there's a borderline call, and so I'm going to make it, and I think it's very likely he probably has a weaker queen here.
Yeah, I can't get away from it now. I mean, I just can't, so I'm just going to call. I don't need to explain it. I mean, it's hard to imagine that the four or the three made a difference here, so I'm just hoping he has queen jack is really what I'm hoping for. So, but I'm definitely calling. I got a decent amount of money in front of me. I'm second in chips, and I can afford it. I don't want to lose it, but I can afford it. So I call.
Right, yeah. No one wants to lose it.
Right.
This is the opportunity where you make these calls, and they go the right way, and then this is where you really accumulate a stack.
All right, here we go. Here's part two.
Hello again. Did we run into a cooler? Or is our opponent betting with a lesser queen? Perhaps he's bluffing, but what would he be bluffing with? He certainly has me intrigued. There's no flush out there, and no straight. What logical hands would he have called a raise with? Ace-queen? Maybe, although he seems like the type of player that would have re-raised us with that holding. Could it be tens? Again, it's probable he would have re-raised preflop. Maybe it's something like queen-jack, or even the same hand we have. I guess tens could be it. When it comes down to it, I just don't think I can fold here. We call. Our opponent tables queen 10. Ugh. He was walking the dog. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying you've got to learn to shrug these coolers off. Otherwise, you won't be playing your best poker. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, I don't like losing pots, but I don't mind losing this one. I like being in a game with a player who calls a 5x raise in the big blind with this weak of a holding. Now, I know people remember this is my favorite hand, but it's not my favorite hand anymore. I've learned, I've evolved as a player by listening to Annie up.
Over 10 years.
Yes, exactly. So this guy got us this time, but I reckon we're going to get him more often than he gets us if he continues to play this way.
I'm going to disagree with you twice here.
Excellent.
I always mind losing a pot. No matter what.
I know that.
And I don't really fault the queen 10 too heavily for calling preflop.
Really? But
let's look at it this way. It's a standard raise. He said it was a standard raise. Okay? So let's just take that out of the equation that anybody else did anything else. If someone makes a standard raise and you look down at queen 10, and it might have even been suited because we don't know it wasn't, you might call, if you're in the big blind, you might call a standard raise and take a flyer. But take that aside. Okay.
All right.
Before he gets to the big blind, okay, there were two callers before he had to make that decision. That means there's a minimum of $75 in the pot. He has queen 10, and all he has to do is call 20. That's almost 4-1 on his money with a juicy Scott Long hand of queen 10. Now, I admit it sucks for us because we had king queen, but also the raise came from middle position, so you have to think that his hand's not that strong. When you're in the big blind and you got two other callers, you're thinking, hey, I'm going to be up against nominal hands here. I got queen 10. I can hit it hard and bust somebody. And that's exactly what he did. So I really can't fault the player, at least as harshly as you made it sound. As the hand goes, I might have checked that turn to control the pot too if I was O'Malley, in case I was being slow played by queen 10 or ace queen.
Sure. Yeah.
But I know it's a 5X raise, but it was standard. So saying it's 5X
makes
it sound like it's this huge thing, but that's what he said was standard in the game. 2-5 plays a lot different than the 1-2
like
and 1-3.
I'll skew my argument so to make it sound better for me.
Yeah, I understand that. And that's why I have to keep you in check, because after 10 years, I'm the watchdog of this show. But I don't know. Do you disagree with me now after I said that? Or?
Well, I mean, I guess I can defend. I guess here's the second step, which we don't know, that would really solidify my thought, is if it wasn't queen, if he didn't hit queen 10 on the flop.
Right.
All right, it's easy now at this point to say, all right, he did well because he hit his hand, right? But, I mean, how many times did we talk about on Hand of the Week in this, that, or even O'Malley, that, you know, if you play junk, you need to play it with a very specific flop in mind.
Right.
And if you don't get it, then you need to get out.
Right.
So if this player is disciplined, let's say it was, you know, I don't know.
4-5-3.
Right, exactly. And didn't get out of the way. It kept firing for whatever, and it didn't make sense. And that's a different story. Obviously, he hit his hand here. So if he's taking your line, which is reasonable, you know, pot odds, woo, and I'll get out if I don't hit hard, then that's fine. I suspect, by the way, he's been described by O'Malley, that he's not the type that gets away from it when he misses. So that's, I guess, maybe I was going a step further before I should have.
Well, I know you called him a maniac, so that's one thing you could have. I mean, if he's a maniac, he should have said Queen 10 is definitely possible here. And he also said it's a method to his madness.
Right.
So the fact that he kept calling means we should have said, hey, you know what? This guy slow playing us, method to his madness. He could have any two cards. We could be beat here. Let's check the turn. And he didn't. So he lost 125 there, and then he lost 300 more.
Sure it was going to change, though, right? I guess it depends.
We checked behind. He was a big blind checked, and we could have checked behind the turn. I don't think he would have shoved 425 in the end. He would have made a value bet.
Well, that's true.
We would have saved money, I think.
But we don't know for sure. Right?
No, yeah. I know, but yeah. I think we would have. But because the pot would have been smaller, there's no reason to bet 425. He bet 300 because the pot was big enough for 300. But
then, I mean, it's really hard for us to believe that we're not ahead here, right?
It is. It is
so
difficult.
That's the other thing.
It is. But we would have saved money if we played it differently, I think.
Yeah. But, I mean, could have been a straight draw or something, right?
So, yeah.
I don't know.
But yeah, I agree. That even if we did check the turn at the river when a blank comes again, we're probably going to value bet. Then he's going to raise us, and then we probably will show. So it may be the same anyway, but just felt like there could have been a more safe way of playing this, maybe. I don't know. But I wouldn't fault the guy for playing Queen 10 the way it came down. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, this isn't a cold cooler, but it's close to one.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is One Hand at a Time, home of poker structural videos online. AntiUp listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/AntiUp. And this comes from Outlaw Josie Flakes. It's actually his real name.
That's awesome.
And he says he was named after the Outlaw Josie Wales.
Wow.
That's pretty cool, right?
His last name's Flakes. At least is my brother Corn. My sister Frosted.
Frakes, not Flakes.
Oh, it says Flakes on the file.
Oh, sorry. Freaks.
Oh, man. Yeah, okay. Now you're freaking me out. It says Flakes on the file. All right. Josie Frakes. With an R?
Yes, an R.
All right. I will fix that. All right.
You good now?
Yeah, I'm good now. Now I can react to the hand, because before
like
all
you
I had was
saw the name before.
Breakfast cereal in my head while I'm doing the hand of the week and making me hungry. It's hard to concentrate.
Oh, man. All right, so this we can take this either way. It is a hand of the week or a situation. I think it's better as a situation. So
good.
I'm just going to read it out, and then we're going to have this discussion.
Good.
All right, so it's a bi-weekly home game. So it's one of those things where they get together every week and they get points, right? And then they have a wild card round at the end. Sounds really cool, actually. But home game, tournament, and our heroes on the button. Blinds are 1,500, 3,000. And the big blind is four stalled in with 1,850. See? 1850. Right? So it's down to us.
Yeah.
Big blind's already in. And we don't know what small blind's going to do. We have the seven of diamonds, the five of spades. He says, I think I should call the big blind just to raise the chances of knocking out the short stack with the small blind who is destined to call. So I do. Small blind completes, and it's three to a flop. Flop comes the six of clubs, queen of spades, nine of hearts. I have an inside straight draw. The small blind checks, and I check as well. Turn is the eight of spades. So our board now is six of clubs, queen of spades, nine of hearts, eight of spades. Boom! Got my straight. Any chance of checking this down went out the door, and even better, I'm in position to control the pot action. Strangely, the small blind bets 5,000. I have roughly 19,000 behind. With the flush draw on the board, I decide to shove and hope for a call, then collect my championship. Then I hear the small snap call, and I know I have this in the bag. He asked, do you have the straight? And I said, yep. He turns up jack of hearts, ten of hearts. Did that just happen? Big blind flipped over queen of clubs, nine of diamonds, and prays for a boat, but there's a blank on the river. Game over. I finished second place again, and you can see the winner's overjoyed face. Oh, I'm sorry. He had a website where you go. The winner's actually the league owner, and he's a great guy for all he does, so he's very deserving. So my question to you guys, was I right to call on the button, or should I have folded and hoped the small blind knocks out the short stack? Did I act too quickly? And could you have sniffed out Jack 10 in the scenario?
Well, it's hard to sniff out Jack 10, but when the guy bets out and we have the ass end of that straight, I'm thinking, wow. I'm sure in the moment, I'm probably thinking I still only the one who could have a straight here and probably would do the same thing. I don't know if I would have shoved. Probably would have shoved. I don't know. But yeah, I would have gotten away from this hand long before that would have folded. I don't care, just because the chance to knock the guy out, the big blind's going to get knocked out by the small blind, likely, or at least whatever. I mean, he's already, even if he wins the pot, he's going to be all in again in two hands or whatever. So I just don't think it was worth risking your entire tournament to knock out one player when you had another guy who was obviously going to be in the hand with him, and they're going to race with two, you know, random cards anyway each. I would have gotten away from an unsuited 7-5, and being on the button means nothing because it's not going to really need position since you're normally you do that sort of assumed collusion where you both check down just to have the better odds of knocking the guy out. And look what happened. It came to bite you on the hiney.
Yeah, actually, you brought up a point I hadn't thought about. It was only 350 to call for the small blind, so, I mean, unless he's a complete moron,
right?
He was going to call with any two cards, right? And
right.
Then you have a chance to knock him out. I think the big mistake here was even getting involved in this hand. You said it well, too. But the other thing to consider is he had about 24,000 to be in his hand.
Okay.
So that's like, what?
1/8 of your stack?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's well less than 10 big blinds, right?
Right.
So at this point, I mean, even when you get down to 15 big blinds, you need to be start looking for a hand to shove with, right?
Right.
10 big blinds, definitely. And less than 10 blinds, absolutely. So if I'm getting involved in any pot with a stack that small, I'm shoving, and I'm the first in to shove. Or I get a big hand and I'm going to call because there's already money in there. There was absolutely no reason to get involved in this hand.
No.
So if you were, you need to shove. And are you really going to shove with 7 of diamonds, 5 of spades when you know the only way to win is through showdown?
Or at least, and you're right, or at least make it a raise that you're going to go heads up with this guy, and then it's just you're racing with one guy. The fact that you didn't get the small blind out is
well, but that's why. So like, let's assume that we shove and we get the small blind out.
Right.
All right. So you get our difference back, you know, because we're only committed to the whatever the big blind 1850, right?
Right.
But there's no way to beat the big blind other than by showdown, right?
Right.
You know, and the whole reason that you do these, you start shoving at 15, 12, 10 big blinds, is because you have two ways to win.
Right.
One is to get everybody to fold, and you don't have to show your cards, and then you collect, you know, the blinds and the andes, which are pretty hefty at this point, right? And if someone does call you, then you got to win the old-fashioned way by actually, you know, having the best hand at the end of the hand. Here, you've taken that first one way out of the completely off the table, and that's the most important one. Now you've got to beat this guy with 7 high.
Right.
And the only thing you can really hope for at that point is the small blind actually does call and has a weaker hand. And, you know, if you don't win the main pot, you might end up winning more from the side pot. But now, do you want to go up against two people with 5-7 offsuit? No. I think that's the problem, is we got short stacked here. And, you know, we thought, hey, it's cool to get this guy out. And I think we should stop thinking about trying to get people out when we don't have enough stack, a stack big enough to really get somebody out.
Yeah, I mean, there's when it's only 1850, if you think your shove's going to get the small blind out, then it's like, all right, it's only 1850, and I can knock this guy out. But why do you have to be the watchdog? Why are you the one that?
Well,
has
that's what
to
I'm
do
saying.
It?
Let yeah. a bigger stack do that.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
Or even let the small blind do it. I don't care what the small blind stack is. You're right. For 350, you know, he's going to call. Yeah. He's going to make this call, right?
Yeah. So why are you just calling? That was a problem right there, just the call.
So it's not like the big blind's going to get a walk here and stay alive. That's not going to happen here.
That's right.
And if that was a possibility, then maybe it's a little different. But even then, I mean, it's my tournament, and I'm responsible for my part of the tournament.
Yeah.
And yeah, I want to see this guy get knocked out, but I need to have a better hand to knock him out with than 7 or 5. So, but he called. So then the problem is at this point, could he sniff out the Jack 10? Well, yeah, you're right. It's hard to sniff out, but I think when somebody wakes up, because again, you're in this implied collusion thing, right? Where you're expecting everybody's going to check it down. So if you were going to bet, which you were, I think the opponent's going to go, why are you betting, right?
Yeah.
So this guy bets, so I think the first question is, why is he betting?
Right.
And we got all excited about our straight and didn't look at the board and see that it's Jack 10 is an amazingly possible combination there, and that we're beat. Now, that being said, we already committed. At this point, I can't imagine me throwing away a straight here with, you know, a couple big blinds left, which is what I have. So
I'm certainly not folding, even if I look at it and go, oh, man, he probably got jacked in. Because, you know, if I'm wrong, then I'm going to win, you know, a nice pot. And I can't be scared by that at this point, I don't think. But I would never gotten the hand to begin with, so it's
right.
But yeah, I think to me, this whole hand is just about stack size and managing those short stacks. You know, we all can't be short stack ninjas, but we can all aspire to be.
All right, well, I know the listeners are probably disappointed that I had no home game stories this week. We played. The only interesting thing that happened all night was Mike Faso jumping around Gambit's living room when the Lightning won the game against Montreal. I've never seen Mike get excited for anything, much less a sporting event. It was pretty remarkable. Maybe he can recreate it for us for our 10-year anniversary. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.